It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. School boards and administrators have hesitated to reopen classrooms completely for in-person learning because of ongoing health concerns for students, staff, and teachers. Now the state is earmarking the just-approved Johnson & Johnson vaccine for an estimated 200,000 Pennsylvania educators and staff. With us is Nina Esposito-Vizgaitis, president of the Pittsburgh Federation of Teachers. Nina, welcome back to The Confluence.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Those first prioritized for the vaccine are teachers in pre-K and elementary, special ed, English language learners, and support staff. Should the state have done this from the beginning when it first started getting doses of any of the vaccines?
You know what? We never intended to jump ahead of the medical people or like first responders. So we were perfectly happy being the 1B in the original 1B that was right behind the first responders and medical staff. But what happened was when they expanded 1A, so we were supposed to be vaccinated in February. We were all set to go. The district had us all ready. And then the state expanded 1A to include everyone else. And I think that's when all hell broke loose. I think that was problematic.
Do you have a good understanding of how it will be distributed to your members and others in the Pittsburgh Public School District?
So I have contacted people at the state level to ask. Pittsburgh is so big, we did have things in line already when we thought we were going in February. Like, we have our own nurses. And so why send theirs in when we have 41 of our own nurses that were ready to go? So those kind of things. But they want to do it with their way. And, you know, I appreciate them doing this, so I don't want to be too much of a pain. But we have some questions, but the state is being pretty rigid about it.
What is maybe your top question, your top concern?
Once again, we are very grateful. But you know what? It would be good to use our own facilities, you know, because we have 4,000 employees. I just have concerns that we have so many people that if we could use our plan that we've been months in the making, it would be good to use our own facilities, spread people out, and use our 41 nurses.
What are you hearing from your members? Are they excited, relieved, frustrated, anxious? What?
Absolutely. No. You know what? They're due to go back in the classroom on the 22nd of March. They were frustrated when we were pushed back because everybody was like, everyone's anxious to go back. Everyone knows that's what's best for kids, even though some kids have done great in this remote, but they are very anxious to go back. They know for the largest group of kids, face-to-face teaching is the best. Plus, I've got to tell you, remote teaching is hard on teachers. They are so anxious to get vaccinated so everyone can be safe. So I think they're very, very pleased.
Do you think the vaccine should be mandatory for teachers?
I know it is not. It will not be made mandatory. For myself, I want to be first in line. I will say this, we have been educating our people for months on it. Our members, so they would feel comfortable. We've had COVID updates every week for months. As soon as we got information on it, we've been working with partners to get it out to our members. The district had a wonderful town hall. So we've been trying to educate our members the best we can so they feel comfortable. My hope would be every one of our members would want the vaccine.
The governor has said because this is a single dose vaccine, the Johnson & Johnson, you don't have to wait weeks for the immunity to kick in, and the teachers should be able to begin going back by the end of the month. You mentioned teachers are scheduled in Pittsburgh Public Schools to return in a couple of weeks, and classes for the first 4,800 students or so are to begin April 6th. With all that new information, with the vaccine available, are you comfortable with having your teachers, your members in the classroom, and the first several thousand children in the classrooms?
Yes. In January, when we thought we were expecting to be vaccinated in February, the executive board of the Pittsburgh Federation of Teachers put out a resolution recommending that no teacher go back until they receive both doses. And that was when we thought there was only the two vaccines. So this makes us very happy And we have continued to work with the district. As you know, the CDC said very clearly, teachers don't have to be vaccinated if you have the layered mitigation strategies in place. So we have continued, just in case we weren't vaccinated, of course we wanted to be, that all of the mitigation strategies are in place. So we have continued to meet with the district to work on things like ventilation, masking, isolation rooms, to make sure all of that is in place. And we're going to continue to do that.
It's been almost a year. The teachers have been doing virtual, hybrid, or some combination of it. Before teachers go back in person, what do they need?
Wow, that's a good question. What do they need? I know teachers have said to us, please, we need some time to get back, to work together, to have some time, like time with their teams, and come up with a plan, get acclimated again, to get back into their, to the swing of things, to get their rooms together. Some of them were working from their classrooms just because that's where their materials were. That's where they were comfortable. They were literally doing remote from their classrooms. But then when the numbers shot up again in the fall, that was shut down too. I think they need support. I think I know parents have been very frustrated. And you know what? We have been too. So I think we need to get to find a way to talk to each other. And I know a lot of parents have been talking, doing a great job, and I commend them too, because this has been frustrating for them also, and we recognize that. But I look forward to us getting together and building our communities again in person. And that really excites me, that we can build communities in person again. And I think we're all going to need to find time and spaces. It's been an awful year in so many ways, but we're going to keep the best things we've learned and get rid of the things that have not served us well.
You mentioned the teachers need support. It's been a trying, frustrating year for so many and so many occupations.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like some might need mental health support just to feel right about themselves and their jobs?
Yes. And you know what? I'm so glad you said that. Thank you, Kevin. And we've got to be very cognizant of our students, too. Some of our kids have been away, and we're going to have to, and we've talked about that. We've talked about that. We've had town halls with our teachers, and our teachers have always brought up to the superintendent what supports will be in for our kids coming back. And I've heard this from even students in other districts that have been in, because they've had to go through in, out. That hasn't been easy either. So actually, our kids have had more consistency because other districts have been in and out so much. That plays with your head too. We have to give each other grace, and we have to find ways to support all of our students and our teachers and our parents too. They've been through the ringer also. We have to find ways to support each other and find the supports to lift each other up and to help each other through another transition time, and find ways how we can support especially our students and each other through this.
Nina Esposito Vizgaitis is the president of the Pittsburgh Federation of Teachers. Nina, thanks for your time.
Thank you. It was a great discussion. Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pennsylvania's Farm Bill has for the second time allocated $500,000 to support urban agriculture infrastructure. Applications for these grants opened last week. In 2019, nearly $100,000 went to supporting urban agriculture in Allegheny County, including a grant to Grow Pittsburgh, an organization that supports school and community gardens and urban farming. Grow Pittsburgh Executive Director Danelle Eusen joins us now. Danelle, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And also with us is Raquie Bay. She's the founder and executive director of Black Urban Gardeners and Farmers of Pittsburgh. Raquie, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Hi, everyone.
Danelle, you used a $50,000 grant to build a new greenhouse. Without that money or the greenhouse, where do you think Grow Pittsburgh would be?
Yeah, without that greenhouse, we wouldn't be able to leverage our financial standing to actually complete the Garden Drains project. We are creating a new urban agricultural hub in Wilkinsburg at Garden Dreams, and we're hoping that will benefit all urban farmers in the region.
Raquibe, will Black urban gardeners apply for a grant this time around? And if so, what might you use the money for?
So, yes, we will be applying for the grant, and we would like to use the funds to build out our farm in Homewood that is a collective group we manage. It's the Homewood Historical Urban Farm in the east side of Pittsburgh, of course, Homewood, and it sits on 31,000 square feet of property. Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason the Secretary of Agriculture, Russell Redding, says this money has been made available is because some Pennsylvanians are experiencing not only food deserts, but food apartheid. What does food apartheid mean to you? Raquibe, you first.
We use food apartheid because this describes generally Black and brown neighborhoods that are low income, working poor, and underserved. And most of the time with food apartheid neighborhoods and communities, residents have to go outside of their neighborhood to grocery shop. So mm-hmm. for instance, in Homewood, there hasn't been a grocery store since 1995. And there are those of us who are working as a collective, Grow Pittsburgh included, to end food apartheid in Homewood.
Danelle, what's your take on food apartheid?
I prefer the term food apartheid because food desert implies that there's something natural. A desert is a natural occurring system in our environment. A food apartheid is a systematic issue that is created by governments and local policy that strips those neighborhoods of grocery stores. So there's nothing natural about not having a grocery store or having access to fresh food, and our word choice needs to reflect that.
Raquibe, your organization centers African-American culture and education in your efforts to support urban farming. What does that look like, and why is that important to do?
We came together to work as a group of African-American Black growers to not only deal with white supremacy in urban ag, but to work on issues of food apartheid in various communities. But these issues can concern policy, Black people on Black land.
How does urban farming relate to racial equity and racial justice, Danelle?
Yeah, urban agriculture and food justice are completely entwined. It allows neighborhoods to create ownership of their land and stewardship of their land, and creating systems that can benefit people of color and their local communities themselves. Without that ownership and out of that security, it allows our neighborhoods to be more adrift and not have the growth and economic growth and economic security that other more affluent neighborhoods have.
Mm-hmm. Raquibe, has the pandemic affected urban farming? Have you had to scale back operations at all?
We had to reorganize our farming practices. Our farm manager, because she is high risk, she wasn't involved as well. But yeah, we had to social distance ourselves on the farm. But also working collectively with the Homewood Food Access Working Group, we brainstormed on what our farmers market would look like. We got a slow start on our farm, I want to say, like a lot of people did. But no, we did not scale back in food production because of COVID and the economic impact. We know we needed to get more food out there. So people were coming to us wanting to learn how to grow food. We partnered with the American Heart Association and Monte Verde Food through a program through the USDA, along with many other organizations, to pass out farmers, their families, produce boxes. And now with those same partners, we have a free farmers market every week, providing fresh produce to the community.
Mm-hmm. Danelle, we know that in the pandemic, we've all been home a lot more. Some of us have even taken the time to start home gardens. Have you seen more people express interest in volunteering?
Yes, we've seen more people be interested in local food in general. being outside was one of the only safe activities we knew what to do when everything started. So the mental health benefits of growing have really come to the forefront right now. We had to scale back on our volunteers just because we needed to make sure that we can control the safety of our staff and sites. But we are still always interested in bringing more people to the farm in the future since we know how to do it safely. Mm-hmm.
From a food security standpoint, has the need for urban gardens as a source of food become even more pronounced, would you say, Danelle?
Yes, I would say that if anything, the pandemic showed how important our local food economy and local food system is, especially urban farming. At Grow Pittsburgh, like Raquive said, we had to scale up. We never shut down. We were essential workers. We grew more food than ever. We built a brand new farm there at Braddock Farms to make sure that we could have more food available more days a week. We extended hours at our farmer's market. We worked on making the Homewood Farmer's Market a weekly farmer's market to make sure that there was fresh produce available. Because people didn't know where their next fresh produce was coming from, we wanted to make sure that it was open and as available as possible and making it as easy as possible. We started doing home deliveries to shut-in seniors and shut-in residents in Homewood. And we also did deliveries of our seedlings just to make sure that everyone had access to them. Mm-hmm.
You've been with Grow Pittsburgh for, I believe, 5 years, but just became executive director last month. So what are your goals for the organization and for urban farming in general in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I started out with Grow Pittsburgh as one of our program staff. So I've seen our organization evolve and become, and we're still evolving. And for me, I just want to make sure that Grow Pittsburgh is a resource for urban farming in the region. When you think of urban farming, you think of Grow Pittsburgh and all the benefits and programs that we have to support urban farmers and backyard growers in general. I want to make sure that everyone has access to fresh food. And if they want to grow their own food, learn how to do that on their own as well.
Mm-hmm. Raquive, you've been helping Pittsburghers garden for more than a decade now. How's the community gardening movement changed since you started? Is it more equitable now?
It definitely is more equitable, not only from the work that our team members have done, but also other organizations such as Grow Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh Food Policy Council to make it more equitable. But as I said, there's still always work to be done.
Raquive Bey is the founder and executive director of Black Urban Gardeners and Farmers of Pittsburgh. Raquive, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Danelle Eusen is the executive director of Grow Pittsburgh. Appreciate your time, Danelle.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Lara Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.